Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair once a month or so, and we welcome Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years. If you've listened to this program before, you know he is the car whisperer, and he can diagnose things that it just shocks me sometimes. Just give us the make and the model and the issue, and you'll be surprised. Give us a call now, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet us if you wish at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number, 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
So you mentioned that the ice is an issue now, the black ice.
Yes.
And you're seeing a lot of cars.
Well, we're kind of out in a rural area, so we have dirt roads to some degree and a lot of driveways. And some people have pretty long driveways.
Yeah.
And I think I have been on my third winching job with cars that have gone off driveways.
Oy.
And one this morning hit a tree, and it did some pretty good damage.
Even at a slow speed.
Yeah, well, the driveway was, there was a hilly portion of it, and I think it surprises people how fast your car will get away from you on ice,
yeah.
Even though it may look okay. So sand and salt and go very slowly if it looks icy.
That's a good plan. That's a good plan. So you told me you're doing a little work on your own.
Well, yeah, you asked if anything was new, and I said, well, we're in the process of kind of straightening out and repainting the 65 Buick Riviera that you were in.
Did I get to drive that? No.
No.
I was in it. And what a car it is. And so this is one that you've had for a long time?
Maybe 4 years. It's not a car that I've had forever. Some cars I've had since I was 18.
Yeah.
This one's about 4 years now. And
are you concerned about when you do something like a repainting job on a classic, are you concerned about the value and making sure that you do it exactly to spec?
It's nice to keep an original car original.
Yeah.
If it's been molested and if it's had things chopped into it, hood scoops, fender flares, and, you know, stereo systems that have got the doors all cut up, you know, the car's losing value and it's not original. But if you have an older car that's not all chopped up, the car's more valuable being left original.
Yeah. And so how do you paint it and make sure that you keep that value?
Well, you know, this car is not perfect by any stretch. It's just a driver.
Well,
you know,
it's pretty
just,
good.
But you know, keep this, maintain the original color, unless you just plain hate the original color and you do what you want with it. But it's nice to keep everything original.
And the interior on that's pretty nice too.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad. It needs some freshening. But
well, that's great. And of course, you probably won't drive it until April or May, right?
Yeah, I think by the time we get done with this whole thing, you know, we're going to have to replace moldings and rubber strips, and it'll be a bit of a project.
Do you charge yourself book value for the hours?
Yeah, exactly.
Good, and then you
yeah.
can write it off.
Yeah.
That's a good little skip. Let's go to Bob in Allentown. Bob, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking the call, Ray and Gordon. I have an 86 Oldsmobile. I call it an Oldsmobile because it's, you know, nearly 30 years old. And I recently had fuel lines put in. They were all rusted out. And had a fuel pump put in it. And since it's come back, it now it lacks power going up hills. And it didn't before.
86 Olds Delta.
Yeah.
Old Delta 88, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a classic front engine V8 rear wheel drive car.
No, it's a V6.
Oh, it is. Oh, is this
a three liter V6?
Is this a front wheel?
Front wheel drive.
Okay,
yes.
It's the first year
yeah. they made the front wheel drive.
See, I'm thinking of the version before that, which was still a big full size framed car.
That's correct.
Okay, so yours is the downsized version.
That's right.
Is yours carbureted or fuel injected?
It's fuel injected.
Okay. When you say lacking power, when it's low on power, is it bucking, chugging, skipping, misfiring?
No, no, it just it almost acts as though the motor doesn't even want to run. It's almost like at an idle or something like that.
So you're pushing down on the throttle hard, but not a lot of action.
That's right. And if I push harder, then it will buck.
Okay. We don't run into this as much as we used to, but the possibility of a plugged exhaust system is there. A plugged catalytic converter in your case, maybe. What happens there is the catalytic converter will slowly plug, and it will take power away, but it's so gradual that you may not even notice it until one day you need to go up a steep hill or pass a car, and it's not there anymore. And now you're keyed into it, and now you're always looking for that power, and it's gone.
Not to interrupt, Gordon, but less than a year ago, last spring, I put a brand new converter on, new exhaust pipes, and the whole works.
Was that because it was plugged up or rusted?
It was rusted out.
Okay. The catalytic converter you put on there more than likely was an aftermarket one.
It was.
And they're much smaller, and it's unlikely that in that short a period of time that has occurred, but it's worth having tested, and you really can't do it yourself to speak of. You know, you can do a pressure test on the exhaust. We tend to separate the pipes and go drive it to see if that takes care of it. Other than things like fuel flow, and you did you say the fuel filter was changed?
Yes, the fuel filter was changed along with everything else.
Yeah. The car has spark plugs and wires and all the conventional stuff, but to pinpoint it, I would be suspicious of, you know, those few things, and I think somebody's going to have to go in there and run a few tests on the car.
Couldn't be a faulty fuel line that they replaced?
Well, if it had lots of power the day before it got fixed and now it doesn't,
yeah,
it would certainly be worth investigating that there's no kink in any line. You know, if they custom bent some fuel lines, if there's a sharp turn somewhere and instead of a smooth bend, it may have gotten a kink. And Ray, you could have it there. It could have a little restricted fuel flow there. So that's worth looking into.
Bob, why don't you have it checked out or check it out yourself and give us a call on the next show, okay?
All right, good enough.
Thanks a lot. Boy, it just reminded me, back in the 80s, I had a 73 Olds Cutlass two-door.
Wow.
That car went fast.
Those were the days.
Yeah, and didn't get very good gas mileage, mind you, but it went pretty quick. Let's go to Tony in Massachusetts. Tony.
Hi. I have a 2003 Subaru Legacy, and it started making almost like a rapping sound, or at first I thought it was transmission or something, but if I'm driving and I shift it into neutral, it's, you know, it still happens, and it doesn't seem to be related to like the speed of the engine. And sometimes if it's going slow, I can hear it a little bit. If it's, you know, if the RPMs are up higher, I can, you know, it's a little bit louder, but I'm just kind of baffled as to what it might be.
So the sound, Tony, if you start the car up and don't drive it, just have it in park.
Yeah.
And you're idling. Are you hearing the sound then? Does it sound like a mild, dull knocking?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you speed the engine up, will that knock increase in rhythm?
Right, it increases with the RPM.
Yeah. Pretty characteristic of that vintage Subaru.
Okay.
Not necessarily anything to worry about.
Yeah.
That vintage Subaru had a lot of noises from the engine coming from what they call piston slap. And
okay,
it's a rattling sound. And I've heard Subarus of your vintage so loud you think the engine's going to fall apart, and it never does.
Yeah, exactly.
And other ones are much quieter. And all the Subarus of that vintage were noisier than you would think they would be.
Right.
And it's not necessarily detrimental. So I don't think you need to be concerned if it's the piston slap issue that those cars were famous for.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was thinking ping at first, you know, like from...
from poor gas?
Low octane or something, but yeah, and I put, you know, fresh tank of gas in and
yeah,
it didn't seem to help any.
Yeah, and that octane ping would not happen at idle. That would only be under a load.
Right, like going up hills and stuff like that when you're...
There's really nothing you can do or really need to do because these things seem to run a long, long time making that noise.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot.
Tony. So piston slap, isn't that indicative of some problem that eventually will destroy something?
It sounds like it, but it's more of an annoyance than a failure waiting to happen. And
but if it's a noise, two pieces of metal are hitting each other, right?
Well, not really hitting. It's the piston rocking in the cylinder. And when the piston comes up to the top and the spark plug ignites the mixture, it fires the piston. And on its way down, the piston does a little bit of a rocking motion in the cylinder. Now, we're talking thousands of an inch.
Right.
Not, a loose, like a bowling ball in a garbage can. And some engines amplify that sound.
It's not a design flaw, or is it? Was it planned?
No, it's not planned. It just turned out that way, and they engineered around it in the later models because it's an undesirable sound, and the newer Subarus really don't do it anymore.
All right, let's take a break. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We talk cars, trucks. That's about it. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back.
Support comes from Empire State Youth Orchestra and Select Chorus, performing Orff's Carmina Burana at the Palace Theater this Sunday, sponsored by Hanay Reels and Bank of America. PalaceAlbany.com or ESYO.org. Edward Garbasik, certified financial planner serving all of Western Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement, ed@havikinwealthstrategies.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Audio Video Corp, offering design and integration services for the boardroom, the conference room, and the classroom since 1946. AudioVideoCorp.com. And University of New Hampshire, offering an online Master of Social Work program, online.unh.edu.
Vox Pop on WAMC. The fun drive starts a week from Monday at 6 a.m. If you want to join in, you can do it right now at our website, WAMC.org. The lockbox is open. Everything we raise in the lockbox counts on day one of the fun drive. By the way, there's a challenge on the table from Berkshire Bank, $10,000. If we can hit the $500,000 mark in that lockbox, I think we're about $380,000 right now. So chip in if you wish. We would love it. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. The phone lines are loaded. Let's go to David in Chatham. David.
Hi. I had a friend had a GMC truck. It was maybe 10 or 15 years old, and he had it in the shop for some reason or other. And they did some work on it, and when they were finished doing the work, they couldn't get it started. So we're all sitting around trying to figure out what might be the problem without actually having the truck in front of us. And one of the guys said, well, maybe when they took the distributor out, it had a mechanical, not an electronic ignition. One of the guys said, well, maybe when they took the distributor out, put it back in, they put it back in the wrong way. And I find it hard to believe that you can put the distributor back in the wrong way. It's got to have some sort of Woodruff key or something like that that lets it only go in one way. Is that possible?
Well, you're correct in some cases. In the case of that vehicle, that is a gear-driven distributor, so it can go in one of about 360 different ways.
Wow.
I guess, right? It's 360 degrees?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not quite. You got to count the teeth on the gear. But, yeah, anyway, that's a gear-driven distributor, so when it gets removed, it needs to go back in the correct location. Some vehicles, they're slotted, and you couldn't get them wrong. They only fit in one way.
Right, but, that's what I would think.
And it's also a common mistake in those days was getting it out 180 degrees out, because when you pulled it out, you have to line certain marks up, and sometimes it's easy to get the engine and the distributor 180 degrees out.
Yeah,
so you're halfway there. That is a possibility that could have happened. Yeah.
So would you call that a design defect or just
no?
On...
There's a lot of gear-driven distributors,
but without a key in it, without some sort of slot or key.
Well, you see, there's nothing that needs to slot it in. It's driven by two gears coming together. So when
I understand, but to prevent it from going in the wrong way.
No. You have to the rule back in those days was to line up all your marks and maybe paint them so you see exactly where they are, and then the rotor has to be pointing in the correct spot. And when you pull that distributor out, it's a gear that has an angled cut. So when you pull it out, the rotor turns. So you have to kind of time where it's going to land when you slide it back in. So it's very easy to be off of one tooth.
And that's all it takes.
Well, one tooth, everything will still run, but it won't run very good.
Wow.
It'll be out of timing then.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. That could be a labor-intensive procedure to get it right.
If the distributor's in a tough location, yeah, because if you got to pull that thing in and out and reline it up, it's takes a little bit.
All right, let's go over to Richard in Queensbury. Richard, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Yes, okay. I have an old Ford van, 1985 E150. I was just leaving on a trip to go to get the thing state inspected, and the wipers stopped working. Okay, the symptoms are that when I... even without turning them on, well, I tried turning the wipers on, and they wouldn't go up. So I turned the switch off, and I still see this jerking in the wipers, slight jerking. They won't go up and down, just the jerking.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the off position. Does that sound like a switch problem or a motor problem?
Have they worked prior till just now? Is this a sudden failure?
Yeah, sudden.
Just a kind of a crazy question, but the cowling where the wipers are and all that's not packed full of ice by any chance. You didn't get a melt, you know, a thaw situation, and now it's frozen solid in there?
Could be. Why would they jerk if the switch was in the off position? No, it sounds like a switch problem.
Well, are they at their normal rest position, or are they partway up the windshield?
They're a little bit up there.
If they're not in their park position, they're always attempting to park.
Uh-huh.
And that's what that quivering probably is.
Uh-huh.
And I would look just for kicks to see if it isn't frozen or iced up in there, because we had so much slush, snow, rain, and then brutal cold. You know, that's something to consider.
Yeah, that's never happened before, so I don't know. We have plenty of ice here. So
the other thing you could do is turn the wipers on and go out and help them. You know, move them, you know, give them some assistance with your arm, your hand, to see if they'll complete a cycle.
Yeah.
But on that vehicle, I mean, on those Fords of that era, there was a intermittent wiper relay that you heard chattering when you moved them to different positions for that intermittent wiper. And that
really... there's no intermittent on
you
there.
Don't have any intermittent?
No.
Okay, well, it's just
off, low, and high.
Real simple system then. You know, you could definitely be... It narrows it down to a couple things. If you've got power and ground, more than likely it's going to be the motor or the switch. But I would do a few tests. See if you can, and if you find you help them and they wipe with your assistance, the motor has probably gotten so weak that it can't move anymore.
Okay.
And you're talking about a wiper motor replacement.
Yeah. They probably don't make those anymore.
Oh, sure they do. Yeah, no, you can still get parts for those.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Have fun.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest, 1-800-348-2551. Brian in Southfield, Mass. Brian, you're up.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I'm a 67-year-old crank from the UK, but I like my cars to have a carburetor and a distributor on the top, an alternator on the front, and a starter on the bottom. And now that Cuba's been, or is going to be, opened up, I wonder if Gordon had any comments about cars that will possibly be available to bring into this country.
I love it.
It's an interesting
question. No rust. I'm surprised the Soul Air didn't kill them, but,
You never know.
You know, they were bulletproof cars.
Yeah, yeah, time stood still.
I hate Chevy Bel Airs, but, you know, that's just a personal thing.
What was the last year? Was it 1958? Is that when the cars stood still in Cuba?
Don't know.
I think it's late 50s, 56, 58,
57,
somewhere.
57, I thought it was. But,
yeah.
I don't know. Most of them are 53s, 54s.
Yeah.
Now, how would they get parts for all these decades?
Well, that's
well, I saw a program on TV yesterday.
Yeah.
Where someone was running the 52 Bel Air with a Mercedes motor in it.
Oh boy! So you could end up with some really cobbled up messes. Maybe
they're
those,
all cobbled up, but
maybe
you
it's
know,
maybe it's something you don't want to import because of the hodgepodge of components in there.
But there is an awful lot of them that are original. They've been lovingly maintained.
Now'd be the time to start making some offers.
That's right. Why don't you head down? Let us know.
Well, they're talking about a $20,000 car here because of its history from Cuba is going to go for $60,000.
Hmm. Well,
you'll be
it scares the hell out of me.
You'll be seeing them at the big auctions, the Barrett Jackson and Meekums.
You can't find a 50 Chevy on stateside?
Oh, yeah. You can find lots of them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all over. Cruise.
Yeah.
And, but they've been, I don't know. Do you know a car that you can still buy reasonably that has a distributor and a carburetor on the top and an alternator on the front and a starter on the bottom?
Not in any countries that I'm familiar with. I don't even think they're making anything like that in maybe even India or China. I think everything is way beyond that now.
That's too bad.
Yeah, so you got to get an old one and refurbish it and keep running it.
Hey, Brian, thanks a lot for the call. I'm with you, by the way. I do love the car. I used to love on a really cold day, if you had to, put a little gas in the carburetor, start it right up. You know, occasionally flames would come out, but
yeah,
you'd be all
give
right.
Give it a few pumps and crank her up.
Absolutely. Brian in Duanesburg. Brian, you're up.
Hello, Ray. Hello, Gordon.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Sure.
All right. I have a 2002 A6 Audi with the 3-liter. And the problem I'm having is it's throwing a camshaft position sensor code. And it said which particular bank it was in, so it was down to 2 sensors. And I bought a new sensor, swapped it in for each of them, and it's still getting the code on that same bank. I tried I disconnected one on the other bank, and it threw the appropriate code. Maybe this will help. When I start it up, it throws the code. You know, check engine light comes on. I reset it, and it's off. And I drive for a while, and then the mill light blinks a few times and then goes back off. Is there something on the other end instead of the sensor, some kind of impeller or something that might be causing us trouble or any help?
Yeah.
I know you're an Audi guy.
How many miles are on this car, roughly?
125.
And this is
just broken in.
And this is a 5-valve per cylinder engine, correct?
Yes, it is. All aluminum.
Yep. What you have in this engine is variable cam timing. And it's operated by oil pressure and actuators that are getting commanded by the computer. And what can happen there is, and this is probably not what you want to hear, but it's possible that you've got a variable cam timing issue in the sense of maybe the actuators are sludged up and sticking, and they're not moving like the computer wants them to.
Not easily fixed?
Well, not easily fixed. Can be fixed, but it could be trouble because if the oil change history is not perfect, oil deposits can get into all these little teeny passages, and they can.
Yeah, it's been perfect since I've got it, and I'm using the synthetic.
Yeah, but yeah. I've had a few of these apart, and we've taken the valve covers off, and we find that there's little plastic pads that there's timing chains on top of these engines as well as the belt on the front. The chains link the two cams together.
Yeah, I already did the belt.
Yeah, this is under the valve covers, and we found that the rubbing blocks are worn out, and they sometimes have worn so badly that they fall out, and the cams go out of time. And that turns on the light for a variety of reasons. You can get misfire codes, and you'll always get this cam position. So that's, I'm not saying this is what your car is doing, but it is entirely possible. And
so it's not like it threw a jump the tooth or anything. It's just that there's more play in it.
It's that the part under the valve cover that you can't see or get to could be in trouble.
Okay, because also I think that camshaft that's exhaust on the right bank, I think it was, I think the front bearing seal is also dripping a bit. Affecting the pressure?
The cam seal?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that won't affect the pressure, but, you know, if somebody's going to go in there, it's a bit of an exploratory because it can get very, very expensive to fix that. So somebody's going to have to go in there and see if that's what happened. It also wants to be, you want to be absolutely sure that the timing belt is perfectly in time. When was the last timing belt job?
It was like 10,000 miles ago.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very unlikely you jumped a tooth on the belt.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's running fine.
Yeah.
But when the light was blinking, it kind of scared me.
Yeah, do this real quick. Even though your oil may be fresh, change it again, clear the light, and drive it. Just see if it has any effect on it.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much for your help.
Brian, thank you very much. Number to call here is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Karen in Amherst. Karen, you're on. Hello, Karen.
Hello? Karen?
No, gosh, I got the wrong. You know what? Leave Karen where she is. I hit the wrong button. This is Gordon in Poughkeepsie. Gordon, you're on.
Thank you. Thank you, Ray and Gordon. I have a 2002 Honda Civic. I have a rattling noise. It was prior to an accident with a deer. It would get cold, and I'd have I hit about 35 miles an hour, and it would be a rattling that I'd feel up the steering wheel. I went to my garage. I had them. They rotated the front tires. They worked on the brakes, and everything was good to go. And then about a few days later, it happened again, but it wasn't as intense. They checked for bent rods. They looked. They even checked the tire pressure. But I'm wondering. What it could possibly be, unless I need to get an alignment. I'm not sure.
So are the symptoms the same, Gordon? Is the steering wheel jiggling? Is that what's happening? You're getting a shake at certain speeds?
Certain speeds, yeah. And I let up the gas. As soon as it seems when it's colder, it seems to happen when it's colder out. I'll go to about 30, 35. There'll be the rattling. I'll ease up on the gas, and then press the gas down again, and then it'll stop the vibration or the shaking. Go ahead.
Do you find that the vibration stops when you're not on the gas?
Yes.
Yeah. You've more than likely got a drive axle issue occurring. A driveline shake usually stops when you take your foot off the gas because you're unloading the drivetrain briefly. And if you step back on it and the shake reoccurs, it's usually a drive axle. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you've got any CV boots that are ruptured or leaking grease all over. It could be an inner joint that's wearing and giving you that shake. I think the drive axles need to be inspected very carefully. Do you have a lot of miles on this car?
Actually, I got it. It's got 88,000 miles on it. I got it around 79,000 miles. It was a great deal.
Yeah.
Our deer collided with me, so I bent the side door. The deer dented right behind the passenger light, and then its rear end slammed into the passenger door. I'm like, oh, let me go to my garage and have them check it out. But it's only 88,000 now since I've had it in probably a few months. And
yeah, I'd be very suspicious of the drive axles. That could be what's going on there. And that's not the worst thing in the world, but okay. I have it checked.
Gordon, thanks a lot. Let's go over now to Karen in Amherst. Karen, thanks for winning.
Thank you very much. A little background. I do my own automotive work. I do the brakes. I do all of that. I do engine rebuilds. Okay, so now I'm going to ask a question that I hope you can make sense of for me. I've been wanting to call for a long time. I had a 69 Volkswagen Beetle. That something happened to both a 69 Beetle and a Renault, a 77 Renault sedan. I don't remember the model. But for both of these cars, first of all, the Volkswagen, I drove it, stopped to go into work, looked back, and saw the oil gushing out of the crankcase. When I came out of work, filled it up again, drove it away, and it was fine. That same sort of thing happened when I was driving the Renault one time, driving at high speed on the highway. I had a conference to go to. All of a sudden, I see a black cloud behind me, and I can't, that obscures a tractor trailer. Turns out it's mine. I get to where I'm going, check the oil. It's dead dry. I go into the conference, come out midday, double check it, go down and get some oil, put oil in it, go back in to finish the conference, come out and drive it home, and it was never a problem again. Have you ever heard of anything like this happening?
All right, that was a great setup for the question. It was a long setup. Karen, hang on the line. We're going to take a quick break, and then Gordon will answer the question.
Thank you.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. We endeavor to deliver satisfaction, and we'll do that next.
Support comes from Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce, offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill, upstatedivorcemediation.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. And Friends of Chamber Music, presenting Exultimus and Newton Baroque, Sunday, February 8th, 3 p.m. at the Emma Willard School in Troy. 518-273-4843.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. Well, if you just joined the story, Karen had an issue with oil leaking all over the place, huge black clouds of smoke obscuring tractor trailers. And I'll let Karen take it from here. Give us a quick recap, and then Gordon will answer your question.
Okay, it happened to two different vehicles, two different times. All of the crankcase oil was drained out right after I drove one car, and then as I was driving it on the highway, the Renault sedan, totally emptied of fuel, of oil. And after letting it sit, I replaced the oil, drove it away, and both vehicles worked afterward.
So neither leaked or burned a bunch of oil after that?
No, and they had not prior to either.
Now, in the case of the Beetle, did you say there was oil lying on the ground under the engine?
I saw it pouring out. I just happened to turn and look as I walked into work, and there it is. I didn't have time to deal with it.
Were these very hot days by any chance? Super hot weather?
No.
No.
And I hadn't driven very far.
Yeah. The Beetles tended to leak because of the design of the engine. They were case halves that were bolted together, and there was a lot of opportunity for oil leaks, a lot of external things there. The hotter it is, the worse they leak, generally.
But you've never heard of this. I mean, it isn't possible. You know, it had to go past the nut, right? I mean, it just is. I just want you to be able to give me some way to understand how this could have happened, because it wasn't just a leak through the seams or anything. It was coming out. I don't know. I don't understand it. I do not understand it, and that's why I've turned to you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, if you had a rapid leak, it's not likely that leak is going to completely stop. But leaks can get worse at different times. Super hot weather, the oil is way thinner. That's why I asked you if it was a hot day.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the Renault, you noticed a lot of smoke coming out. Do you think it was coming out the tailpipe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was coming out the back, and as I checked the dipstick, there was no oil.
How much did you have to put back in it to bring it to full? Couple of quarts.
I put the almost four quarts. I mean, I went in about four quarts, put it in.
And when was the last time you had checked it prior to that day? Long before then? Or, I mean, did you know?
No, I maintained. I always keep track of it.
Because we find a lot of vehicles come in for oil changes, and there's not much left in them. But
yeah,
nobody
no.
checks their oil, so
yeah.
Nobody knows how long that's been happening. It could be the last 4,000 miles, and if a car can burn a quart every 1,000, you can be out of oil in 4,000 miles or very low.
I was maintaining it, so it wasn't that. This was a physiological thing that happened,
yeah.
and it doesn't make sense.
Well, the Renault, you could have had a crankcase ventilation issue that was going on while driving that allowed the engine to drink up a bunch of oil. And I'm not sure what they used at that time for a PCV or a crank vent system, but the crankcase ventilation systems, when they fail, can cause an engine to consume lots and lots of oil.
So then it would work again? It would fix it?
Well,
fix itself?
Let's say it had a stuck PCV valve. And this is very, very hypothetical.
Okay.
But let's say this PCV valve, positive crankcase ventilation. Let's say the valve went haywire and didn't work, and it caused engine vacuum to suck a whole bunch of oil out of the crankcase while you were driving.
Right.
And let's say there was a piece of junk or dirt in that valve, and it remedied itself. And the valve now starts working again.
Mm-hmm.
Your oil consumption's back to normal after you drank up quarts and quarts of oil. That's possible on the Renault. The Beetle does not have that elaborate of a system. It's very, very basic. So I don't know what happened to the Beetle.
Where
that oil went, but the Renault could have been a crank vent issue.
This is like a Dr. House episode.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Okay.
Good job, Karen. Thanks
a
lot. That's a great call. All right, over to Laura in Port Jervis. Laura, you're on.
Hi. My son just bought a Nissan Altima. I'm not sure what year it is. It has power steering, but at a certain spot, the power steering, it's like it just stops. And if you continue to turn the wheel, then it just re-engages.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if that's something that could be dangerous and if it should be fixed right away and what the fix would be.
Sure. This is probably what you're feeling when you're steering the car in a parking lot where you got to make a whole bunch of revolutions of the steering wheel. You'll feel it get hard to turn and then normal, then hard, then normal, then hard, then normal. Is that the pattern?
Exactly that.
There is a lower steering shaft on that car that has a universal joint in it. And a universal joint allows the turning motion to make a corner. And that joint is rusting and seizing up on that vehicle. And it's very common. We've been replacing lots of them in the last few years. And that's what's happening to this car. And it can be dangerous, and it should be fixed right away. So it's fixed and over with. Because you can't take chances with your steering, your brakes. You know, there's some things you can kind of let slide.
Yes.
But you need to be able to steer and stop the car.
Exactly why I'm calling.
Yeah, so I would get that taken care of, and it's going to end up being that lower shaft with the universal joint built into it. They're not hard to replace.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. The sheet fell down with the name of our caller, but. Is this Pat in LaGrangeville? No. Okay. Is this Pat in LaGrangeville?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, you're on.
2003 Chrysler Town and Country minivan, and I've got a rumble that feels like it's coming from right under the driver's seat. I've had three different people on this thing. Sway bar lengths have been changed twice, and whatever this problem is, it seems to be something that leads to sway bar lengths being ruined. And nobody else seems to have figured out what it is. It's not an engine mount, but any ideas? These cars aren't known for their comfortable ride to begin with. But
the Chrysler minivan, you said?
Yeah, 2003.
Oh, I'm with you there. Okay.
So is it a is it a banging, knocking noise that you hear when you go over certain bumps?
Yeah, knocking, and it can be over very minor bumps. If I hit a tail at the conic, you know, heading south from here, you hit the, you know, the storm grates, and there's a big thump. That doesn't set it off, but it seems to be the more minor road repairs that set it off, and it feels like there's a whole shaking. I call it a brumble, but yes, it's definitely a knocking.
Yeah. You've talked about sway bar links, but what about sway bar bushings?
Right.
Have they been replaced?
I don't know. I thought that when they would do that they would be smart enough to check it. Three different people all seeming to be quality mechanics.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing with sway bar links. If you raise the vehicle up on a lift that lets the wheels hang.
Right.
A lot of the time, if there's slop and looseness in the sway bar bushings, it's masked by the suspension hanging.
Right.
So the way we check these is we bring the car in on the floor and have one guy rock the vehicle like you're trying to tip it over. And another guy goes under it with a light and shines it at the sway bar where it goes through the bushing, or you put your hand on it. And that is the way to determine if you've got a bad sway bar bushing. And they're very easily overlooked because you have to check them a certain way. And it's super common for those minivans to need those sway bar bushings fairly often. I'm guessing that's what you've got going, unless your guys have already done the bushings with the links. Then you've got other things.
I don't think so. No, I think everybody's going on the quick, and they think it's just a link because it beats the hell out of the link, you know?
Yeah.
The thing is, could it possibly be a strut mount? Would the strut mount be? I think a strut mount would be a much worse situation, right?
That is certainly possible to be an upper strut mount.
Right.
And same thing, you know, you need to try to rock the vehicle with somebody under the hood, hanging on to those things while somebody else really, you know, tips the car sideways, you know, like you're trying to tip it over.
Yeah.
Right. What kind of price is on the bushings? How much does it cost to replace those?
Relatively easy task. The bushings are maybe, I don't know, $20 for the parts, and might be, depending on if you got issues with nuts and bolts being rusty, an hour or so labor.
So it's not a big job.
And the results are great because it'll really tighten the car up.
All right.
Right. All right. I think you've answered me. Thank you so much. What a great show. Wish you had it more often.
Thanks a lot, Pat. We appreciate it. Let's go over to Josh in New Paltz. Josh, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
So I have a wiper question as well.
Right.
I'm back and forth between motor and switch myself. I got a 98 Chevy pickup. And this has been an ongoing problem where sometimes I go to put them on and I just get a noise, like a meh. You know, sometimes they do go on. Sometimes they go on and stay on. You know, sometimes they stop in a random position along the windshield.
Okay.
All of these kind of...
Yeah.
I'm thinking more of a switch issue, but at the same time, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. It is hard sometimes to determine unless one of them fails entirely. But if you're suspicious of the switch, sometimes if you take the switch and kind of just stir it around a little bit, wiggle it around, and you'll find sometimes that it all of a sudden starts working, or you can make it quit by taking that stalk and just kind of wiggling it around a little bit. So try that, and if you find that it reacts to that, you definitely have a switch issue.
Okay.
As far as it being a motor issue, when it's failing, if you can get to the wiper motor, bang on it a little bit. I don't mean smash it in two with a hammer, but give it a good rap with maybe a big screwdriver handle or a plastic hammer, and if that reacts and you bang on the motor and all of a sudden bang, the wipers move about 10 inches and stop, more than likely you got an issue with the wiper motor.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
All right.
Well, I've never actually you know, tried whacking on anything outside the vehicle, but, you know, I know inside when I'm trying it, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And if it does, it works kind of like a mind of its own. But
yeah, we'll give those experiments a try. It might help you narrow the problem down.
Josh, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Matthew in Columbia County. Matthew, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Hey, Gordon, how are you? So I got a 2000 Camry, and I had the timing belt. The car just wouldn't move like 3 months ago. It just died right there on 9J heading down towards Hudson. So I ended up having to change out the timing belt. Since then, when I come up on a slight hill or a type of ingrade, it'll start to buck a little bit. And if I take the overdrive switch off, it's, you know, it downshifts and it'll run fine until I get to a plane where I can put it back into overdrive and then it runs fine. But I feel like the timing belt might be off, but maybe you can give me some insight on this.
Yeah, it's possible that what you've got is an ignition related issue occurring. And I think on that vintage Camry, you might have had, is it a 4-cylinder car?
Yes.
Yeah. I think on those you had, I don't know if you had individual coils. You may have one coil per cylinder, or you may have two coils with a little loop wire, but you may have a coil spark plug issue. Secondary ignition is what it's called, and that chuggle will come about on light loads in overdrive. If you take it out of overdrive, the load is less. There's some slip going on in the transmission torque converter, and you don't either feel it or it just doesn't bring the problem about. If the timing belt was off a tooth, I think you'd be having more issues than an intermittent buck or a chuggle. So I would be interested in checking the ignition system out. Spark plugs, coils, wires, that kind of stuff.
That would be a cheap fix.
Yeah. Huh.
All right, yeah, because that kind of concerned me because, you know, I laid down, you know, some good coin to have that timing belt put onto a vehicle that has 100 and almost 70,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
You need that anyway, though, right?
Oh, critical component, yeah.
Matthew, thank you very much for the call. It is amazing how much improvement a good set of spark plugs
Well, you see, they last so long now. Some of them are at intervals of 105, 110,000 miles.
Yeah.
So they get overlooked because you don't think about it. So now you got 140 on them, and when you take them out, if you can get them out, there's nothing left to them.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, in the 90s, I had an Escort GT, got to about 100,000 miles, and it would stop, especially in the rain. It would just stall at red lights, and it would...
Yeah. You were having secondary ignition issues.
Spark plugs ran like a top for another 80,000 miles.
Yeah.
All right, let's get one more at least in here. Let's go to Xavier in Chicopee. You're on. You got to turn your radio down, okay? All right, that's not going to work out. Let's go over. Sorry, Xavier. Let's go to Rudy in Niskayuna. You only have about 30 seconds, Rudy.
Yes. So I thank you for taking my call. I took my 2009 Camry for like oil change, and they said, I should get like my wheels aligned. And right after my wheel alignment, my car started like wiggling. So I took it back to them. They said, like, oh, the wheels are, like, badly aligned. And unless I change my tires, there's nothing that can be done about it. So can I just keep on driving even with the wiggling?
Yeah, there's a bit of a misconception because alignment doesn't correct a shimming or shaking of the steering wheel. That's related to tire balance, tire wear, or bent wheels.
Ah.
So you probably have some tires that are poorly worn or badly worn, and they can't be balanced anymore unless they didn't balance them. The only thing you could try is a rotation and a balance. Get the best, most round tires on the front, and that might take care of that shake or wiggle.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I took it to the dealership, and they really moved those wheels back, and it stopped for a while, and then started again.
We're about out of time, Rudy, but last word on that, Gordon?
Yeah, you still could have an issue with tires, even though they may have been just recently balanced. If they're so poorly worn, they're not going to be round anymore.
Okay.
And they're balancing, but they're not round, so they're still going
to
shake.
All right, that's where we'll have to leave it. Thank you, Gordon Fricke. Support comes from Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953. SHEEHY opticians.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services at a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. And H. Houst & Son True Value Hardware and Just Ask Rentals, Woodstock, New York, specializing in energy-saving ideas for home winterizing since 1932. Behind every project is a true value, hhoust.com. Thanks again for listening. Thanks for all the great calls. Thanks to Gordon Fricke. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Your phone calls were answered by Mary Vetter. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I am Ray Graff. Have a nice rest of your Thursday. Food Friday tomorrow.